In ways both obvious and hidden, we've overspent and raised taxes to cover it. To win elections, politicians from both parties made promises to special interests that the state could never afford.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You know my pledge. I vowed to dislike both parties equally. But there wasn't much I saw Governor Rauner say yesterday that wasn't an offer, that wasn't a step towards the Democrats saying, hey, here's something, respond to it. Rick Pearson, gets combat pay to cover Springfield and all of politics. We've talked many times about how it's never been quite this ugly, and there's no end in sight to it. Rick joins us now, and Pat Brady will give us his take on Rauner as well, coming up here in a few minutes. Eric Edelstein is on assignment today. Rick Pearson, of course, host of the Sunday Spin, and he's Channel 9 CLTV, and of course, ChicagoTribune.com and Chicago Tribune as well. Good morning, buddy.
Good morning.
What are you doing Sunday?
Sunday, we're going to be talking about the budget message, and we'll be talking with my colleague, Kim Geiger, who was in Springfield for the speech, as well as University of Illinois Professor David Berman, who's a budget expert.
You know, we were kidding around about this a couple of weeks ago, but as far as I know, it's unprecedented. But what the governor had to do yesterday was give it a budget address for the upcoming budget year when there's no budget for the current year we're in. If you pitched that for the Twilight Zone, they never would have taken the script.
No, and in fact, even Hillary Clinton mentioned yesterday during her stop in Chicago that this seems like material that's perfect for a sitcom.
Yeah, except it's not so funny.
That's what I was just going to say.
All right, so what did Governor Rauner say yesterday that shouldn't be responded to by Madigan, Cullerton and Company?
Well, I mean, one of the things is that he said that he does not need to have all the elements of his turnaround agenda, one of the themes central to this impasse. He doesn't need all of those things all at once. But he didn't really provide any specifics on what he would settle for. And frankly, one bottom line here is that the budget, while he did not give a lot of specifics, that was left to a later budget briefing. The budget he proposed is basically $3.5 billion out of whack. And there's a little line in the budget briefing books that says, well, we'll work together and close the hole, or let me decide where to make the cuts. And in a way, I think that takes away from a major messaging point that the Republican governor had against the Democrats, in that last year they passed a state budget plan that was $4 billion out of whack. So, I was joking, it's Groundhog Day 366.
You know? Yeah, but here's what I don't understand, and help me figure this out or understand it, and maybe the listeners feel the same way about this. How does a business, if you look at the state of Illinois as a business, and I don't mean that in a campaign way, I mean just look at it, you have to have a budget for your business, and then you have to budget in the next year. How do you have a budget for a new year when you don't know what your budget was for the previous year?
Well, in a way, you kind of do know, and it's not necessarily by the action of government. You know by the action of the courts. And through this impasse, we've got 90% of state government is being paid for, even though there is no authorization from the government to spend money. So it's primarily by court order. So you do have a basis to know what your spending number is, which is right now in his proposal is over $36 billion. The trouble is that the revenue is only estimated to be more than $32.5 billion. And so, kind of what you have to spend, and primarily it's because of court order.
So are we going with a new slogan, Illinois, legislate by litigate? Is that day we're just going to... We'll run the government, but only through the courts. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it, kids? Stand by more with Rick Pearson in just a second. Seven 20, Rick Pearson, Sunday Spin, Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. And a couple more questions before I let you fly. Hillary Clinton spoke yesterday in Bronzeville. Did she make some money? She raised some money?
She also, yes, she had three fundraisers downtown. An interesting dynamic that's shaping up is the fact that a lot of Hillary Clinton's donors have contributed the maximum amount that you can give under federal rules, whereas Bernie Sanders has been relying on small donors, lots of small donors, and that actually allows him a pool to be able to go back to those people and ask for more money. So I think we're in for every bit of a protracted race. It's also, you know, we always say it's all about the delegates, and all of the Democratic primaries and caucuses are proportionally awarded delegates. So there are no winner-take-all states like we're going to be seeing in the Republican race down the road. So as long as the race continues, Bernie Sanders is going to pick up delegates, Hillary Clinton's going to pick up delegates, and we might be in for a rerun of that extended battle between her and Barack Obama from 2008.
There's been a lot of discussion after New Hampshire in particular where she got smoked about the superdelegate piece of the story. The delegates are committed. The superdelegates can move wherever they want. The superdelegates will go where the wind blows. I'm not too concerned about this in any way, shape, or form, because the superdelegates will go for the candidate that looks like they're going to win, right? Isn't that the historical path?
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about, you know, an establishment, that's who the superdelegates are. Those are party elected officials, governors, members of Congress, senators. They are basically what the party establishment is.
So the race isn't rigged. It's just this is the way it's set up, and the superdelegates will be fine.
That's exactly the way it's set up. But other than that, the actual delegates that are awarded in the caucuses, which is the bulk of the delegates in the primaries and caucus system, those are awarded proportionally based on how the candidates individually fare in those respective states.
One last question. It's quiet at City Hall. It's a little too quiet. What's the mayor up to?
Well, actually, the mayor has a proposal that he's unveiling today that's an effort to basically encourage development, but also encourage development in impoverished neighborhoods. It was kind of interesting noting that Hillary Clinton was in town. I have Mayor Emanuel, who's a Clinton supporter, but she spoke about the issue of gun violence and gun violence in the African-American community, and, of course, things like Laquan McDonald, and that's really, again, where Emanuel needs to start working very rapidly and very hard to shore up support.
More from you Sunday morning. Again, the guests are?
I've got Kim Geiger, my colleague from the Tribune. I also have a representative from Illinois' higher education community, public colleges and universities, struggling without a budget, and also U of I budget expert David Merriman.
I think the last time Kim Geiger was on with you, you were sitting in the chair I'm sitting in now in a Santa hat.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, saw that picture.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, well, no, it was a good look for you. Enjoy your day, buddy.
All right, you too, Steve. Thanks.
At Rap30, RAP30. Pat Brady joins me next, 720 WGN. Pat Brady's here. Next Generation Strategies is where he runs a company that helps figure out the politics and steer people in certain directions. And you've been open that you've been working with the Kasich folks for a while. Has he got any heat in South Carolina, or is that not going to be?
Yeah, he got. There's a poll was out earlier in the week, had him in second place. He's getting a lot of newspaper endorsements, but I think the real mover right now is Marco Rubio, who seems to be jumping up. But you know, I think Governor Kasich, who's the governor of Ohio, his big push is going to be here in Illinois and Ohio on March 15th when he gets back to the Midwestern states, where it's probably do or die for him. But he's got to draw an inside straight, but he's still got a shot.
This is a very big year for Illinois in the primaries. All right, let's get back to Springfield for a second. Yesterday, the budget address by the governor. Rick laid out the journalism side of this. Give me your take on what the governor said.
First thing that didn't get much notice, or at least discussion, is that he said he's going to Jim Durkin and Christine Rodonio introduce a bill, a separate education funding bill. So early childhood education in K through 12 is going to be fully funded. Actually, the funding is going to be increased and fully funded for the first time in 7 years. So I thought that was a big story. It hasn't gotten much ink, but this is what he did. Two budgets, $36.5 billion.
Right.
And he said to the Democrats, listen, this is out of whack, but I will work with you to get this budget in whack, including...
In whack, I like that. You invented a term. In whack, I like that.
You didn't bring
not
it on
so,
for
not
my
so
intellect
whacked.
Here. No, not in whack. Sorry about that. but balanced, including tax increases. And as Rick said, he said, I'm not stuck on all my reforms that I've been pushing. And he left it at that. Remember last year we were talking about the Democrats submitted a budget $4 billion out of whack and gave it to the governor. Basically, the politics there was they're going to give it to him and say, here it is, take it or leave it. You have to make the cuts. So in the primaries that are coming up here, they can say, look at the evil Governor Rauner making all these budget
cuts. Right, it was a setup.
So what he did this time is say, hey, either work with me and we can get this one budget balanced, including tax increases, but it also has to include the reforms he's talked about, at least some of the reforms. Or give me the statutory authority, give me the budget, and I'll make the cuts. I thought politically pretty courageous and trying to get to a resolution.
And what has the response been from the Democrats?
They dismissed it out of hand walking out the door. Even the pension discussion where there was supposed or hopefully agreement with the Senate Democrats, President Cullerton seemed to laugh at that too. So I don't know where it's going, but I give him a lot of credit for, hey, we got to do something.
Was Cullerton not serious about the proposal that he and Rauner seemed to move on together a week and a half ago?
I think he was. I think he's negotiated in good faith with the governor's office. And I thought they had a done deal a couple weeks ago, but we need to get this done.
What shut it down? What are you hearing?
Well, there were some, I think by the governor's own admission, there were missteps in that press conference that gave President Cullerton an opportunity to back off and had Madigan take a shot at the governor. But I do think, in principle, they're still in agreement, and hopefully we'll get it done sooner rather than later.
And, I would like concrete proof that Mike Madigan is still alive, because I know he's sitting in the front row most of the time when he's there, but I'm not sure that's him. Because as far as I know, if you're alive, living and breathing, you can function and you can, you know, say things in regards to your job that actually move the ball in your job, and in this case for the people of Illinois. Or you can engage in conversation with others of a public manner. And frankly, I haven't seen either. I'm not sure Mike Madigan's alive.
He may not be, but they are so in lockstep with the unions because the unions fund their campaigns. And that's what this is all about, is keeping the majority. And the governor extended his hand and said humbly, you know, let's work this out or give it to me and I'll do it.
But here's the thing that just, again, I beat my head against the wall. People wonder why my head's so large. It's the swelling from beating my head against the wall. This is no different than the gun argument to me. I support the Second Amendment. I don't support the lunacy of gun rights activists who say, don't touch anything ever, no matter what happens in life. Nothing can ever change. It's insane. It's ridiculous. The same thing goes to the union discussion. I'm a union member. I support unions. But life changes. And the only way to save this state is to make adjustments. Not saying wipe out unions. These are adjustments. I still say burning clubs. A busload or two of people with burning clubs outside of Springfield is the only chance.
Yeah, a lot of bad decisions made in the 90s by Governor Edgar and compounded by not making the payments in 2005 and 2006. And it got us where we are. But you're right, the reality has changed.
The reality has changed. And in the past, it doesn't matter what Blagojevich did or didn't do.
No,
none of that matters.
It doesn't. But
none of it matters. You got to start now. And what matters going forward?
But the thing that's appealing to me is more taxpayers, not more taxes. And we have to grow this economy. People are leaving here in droves. And we need to create an economy here that'll grow and, you know, make less burden on everybody. Because right now we're looking at some substantial tax increases, and that just drives people out.
Well, here's the hardcore reality. All over America, people move every day. And there's young families somewhere in America today who are going to sit down and they're going to say, well, you know, we've got two options. We can go to Chicago. We can go to Denver. We can go to Chicago. We can go to Nashville. We can go to Chicago. We can go to wherever. And you know what comes up when they say Chicago now? It's not how great would that be. What comes up, we go, oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's Denver. I think it's Nashville. I think it's Salt Lake City. Those are the decisions families all over this country are making not to come, along with the families that are leaving here.
Greatest city in the world. I don't know why you wouldn't want to live here, but I understand why people go through that calculation.
Yeah, but part of it is the image that gets created and gets reinforced every day. And how can you fight the image that's created nationally with the inmates running the asylum?
Well, it doesn't help when the presidential nominee of the Democrats drops in and uses the 19th century candidate, uses a 19th century term, calling him a robber baron. I don't think that added a lot to the discussion yesterday.
No, she turned into everything. Hillary Clinton's losing this race, and we'll get into the presidential thing. Hillary Clinton's losing this fight to Bernie Sanders to a large degree because she's not likable. Yesterday was every reason she's not likable. And Bernie Sanders, by the way, is a socialist old hippie who had no idea he'd be in this position any more than Trump did. Good God, you explained it to me.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN.
.7:40 in the morning. Pat Brady's here from Next Generation Strategies. How do we follow you on social?
Pat underscore Brady. You're getting very hip.
What are you talking about? This is 1992, buddy.
Oh, well, that's it for me and you.
I helped make that song. Yeah, and I don't make stuff up. It's 7:41, and the Steve Cochran Show continues. Pat Brady's here. Eric Edelstein's on assignment. It always sounds more important if I say that as opposed to he's doing his job. So... but we were talking before with Rick Pearson about the presidential race. Let's start on the other side with the Democrats. Hillary Clinton comes to town yesterday. She probably raised a lot of money. But she had Nevada in a walk. It's now a dead heat. And this all comes down to two factors in poll after poll after poll. It's honesty and likability. How big a deal is likability in a race?
It's been proven to be huge for her, and not just likability, but credibility. 7 in 10 think that she doesn't tell the truth. So it's been a huge problem for her. And even this morning, her campaign people are walking back saying, we may not win Nevada, which was supposed to be one of her firewalls.
So if you don't win Nevada, I mean, she'll win South Carolina. She barely won Iowa. I mean, it was margin of error stuff. She got drilled in New Hampshire. So we're essentially at 2-2. That's what it would be after Nevada.
The difference, though, for Nevada is her big premise throughout this has been that she can appeal to a more diverse state, which Nevada is, as African-Americans and Hispanics, and not just as lily white as New Hampshire or Iowa. If she loses there, that argument's out the window.
So what does that mean for momentum going into the SEC primary, the Super Tuesday stuff, the Midwest primary, all of that?
It means she might have some problems. I still think she's going to be the nominee.
Yes, I
take a little bit of issue with Pearson. I think the Democrats rig theirs up much better than the Republicans do on the superdelegates and the way the caucuses are set up and the proportionality versus not proportionality. So she still will be the nominee, but she's going to be have to tack so far to the left. I mean, she's basically, substance-wise, Bernie Sanders' slightly younger sister. I mean, she's talking pretty far left right now.
But here's the thing that's remarkable to me, because there's not 47 candidates. It's her and Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders is as radical a liberal who has come along in a very long time. If it was any candidate in that position, would they be doing as well as he does? Or has he really touched a nerve with people on the Democrat side?
I think he's touched a nerve. And I think, and I know some disagree with me and probably some that are listening, but I've seen her. She's a terrible retail candidate. We saw it yesterday. She's just not very good at the campaign side of it. The delivery of the speeches, the screeching, and even the substance now is not appealing. And when we saw her in Iowa, and I know Andrew was there too and had a different takeaway, but it was a 7-point speech talking about tax diversions that, you know, by the end of it, everyone was lost. And so doesn't have much appeal. And she represents establishment in a non-establishment year.
Well, here's the thing that surprises me, Andrea, continually. Mm-hmm. This is a woman who is without question the most ready candidate in the field.
Right.
And this is one of the most experienced people ever to run for president. Experienced. You can argue about how she did the various jobs,
right. But
she's been there. How can she be in a struggle with the crazy old hippie from Vermont?
Oh, I think Pat hit the nail on the head. I think she rubs a lot of people the wrong way. Even staunch Hillary supporters now have another option in Bernie Sanders. Yeah, their politics are somewhat different. I mean, I know he's much more left than she is, although you wouldn't know that from what she's been saying lately. But I think certain people think, you know what, I'm not going to vote for Hillary, and Bernie's the only other option right now.
The only demographic she wins right now is 65 and older women.
Is that right?
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
And she got creamed in the first couple states. All the young people voted for Bernie. Of course, that's free college, and life's going to be great.
I wonder how many people who say, yeah, they're voting for college really, really, really believe in their mind, oh, I'm going to get free college. He's going to be the president, and I'm going to college for free.
I find it hard to penalize first-time voters and 18 to 22-year-olds who have enough trouble just passing at school to pay enough attention to understand what reality is, that it's legislation that has to go from the president to Congress and after Congress turns it down, then their free college goes away. I'm not blaming the 18 to 22-year-olds, but I do blame the parents who didn't explain to the 18 to 22-year-olds, you're not getting free college. You have to work. It's just not going to happen that way. And by the way, free college now means apparently free community college.
Whatever.
That's one of the – well, it's not going to happen.
No,
it's not going to happen. But the point is, you know, if there's kids walking around who are thinking, I could go to the University of Illinois for free, cool.
Yeah.
No, we're talking about
maybe if you're from China, but not.
Only if you're from China.
If you took that off the table, if you took that proposition off the table or that proposal, I wonder how many young people would actually say, yeah, I'm going to vote for Bernie Sanders.
But even the young women, and I thought I was wrong on this. I thought that she would be an inspiration to young women because she busted the glass ceiling, but she's just old news and doesn't really present anything new for the youngsters.
But you know what's funny is most of the young people that love Bernie Sanders have no connection to the Clinton Bush era, even right. W. So how could they be sick of Clinton and Bush when they didn't live that experience?
Because she doesn't present a very compelling reason to vote for her. She doesn't.
It's
have
a non-aspirational.
Exactly. That's what we said.
Well, you brought it up forever.
Yeah, it's non-aspirational. Bernie's talking aspirational. She's talking, well, we can't do that. Well, you don't win saying, I mean, look at Obama versus what happened with John McCain last time.
I would argue, too, that, though, Hillary probably gets the support of a lot of middle-aged women.
Sure.
I really would. 45 plus.
The key and what we know is the people who aren't involved now, moderates and independents who aren't involved now, are going to swing this one way or the other. And if we knew what they were doing, we wouldn't be doing the show.
But she's relying a lot on African Americans and Hispanics to turn out for her. And I think she's going to might have issues with that. I mean, her husband passed the crime bill and the three strikes were out, meaning you go to jail forever on your third felony. That was a Clinton era piece of legislation. So how do you answer that to the people that are sitting in jails for the rest of their lives?
How much different is the far right than the far left? The non-aspirational candidate who says America sucks on every level is still leading nationally, but maybe not by so much. One poll yesterday has Ted Cruz, good God, who's more frightening, leading Donald Trump now.
Arf, 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 you know?
I'm really rich. The force is strong with this one.
Son of a bitch! Give me a
drink. One of the night. Yeah. I don't drink much, but I may start. New poll out from NBC and the Wall Street Journal. We were going to ask Chuck Todd about this yesterday, but, Chuck's busy. He's got something going on tonight. Whatever. But you should watch Meet the Press on Sunday. And Chuck will update you on whatever he's doing. But in the meantime, the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll shows that Ted Cruz is now leading Trump nationally. I know how wacky these polls are. And I know how you and I know how Edelstein feels about him in general. Is there more validity to NBC and the Wall Street Journal?
You know, I don't know. But the one observation I had when I saw that poll is initially after Trump's disastrous debate performance Saturday night, it makes me think that people don't watch on Saturday night. People watch through social media. People watch it later. And the more that sunk in, and I think that poll better reflects than the kind of snap polls they did right after. But that's usually a pretty reliable poll. It seems to be an outlier right now.
Is Ted Cruz viable beyond conservative states, strongly conservative states?
I don't think so. I don't think he'd be a good nominee for the Republicans. I think he's way too far to the right, way too strident. His biggest accomplishment in life, two accomplishments, getting elected to the Senate, shutting the government down, and starting a campaign for president the next day.
And since we know shutting the government down is a disaster, how is the Supreme Court story any different? It's shutting the government down.
Well, let's look at it, take a step back. Let's give Senator Kirk some credit, too, because he's the one that said, let's let the guy grieve and let his 9 children and 27 grandchildren go to the funeral. And
right.
So he just said that everybody needs to take a break. Now, I don't know why Senator McConnell came out Saturday, I think before Scalia's body was even back home, and said, we're not going to accept a nominee, which you opined on. But he's losing support on that. Even Chuck Grassley, who's head of the Judiciary Committee from Iowa, Senator Lee from Nevada, said, no, we're gonna let this go through. To me, the bad part of it, or the not thinking it through part of it, is if you want to kill a nomination, there are a billion ways to do it. I don't know why.
Well, they can take it up in committee and not even commit to a vote.
You know, and they'll slow roll the emails anyway, and it'll go on for months. And there is a rule or an agreement or pact, whatever you want to call it, in the Senate. I think it's called the Thurman Rule, that the Senate will not confirm somebody in the last 6 months of a president's term. So it was just bad politics all the way around.
But it's customary. It's a handshake. It's the Constitution is concrete, and you can't campaign on the Constitution and wrap your arms around it and then say don't go by those rules.
Listen, there's hypocrisy on both sides when President
right, but
Obama
let's talk about the hypocrisy that's actually going on right in front of us.
Oh, yeah.
How the Republicans are in a circular firing squad.
Yeah, and they're backing off now. I agree. I saw that. I go, why are you doing this? Just let it go through.
Right.
And then actually the president who held back I thought was smart, and then he stepped in it on Wednesday talking about when he filibustered or tried to filibuster Alito when he was up. So, I think the impact politically, though, is a bit overstated because I'm not sure if I walked out on Michigan Avenue right now and I asked people about this Supreme Court nomination, whether it would really affect them. But I don't think it was very smart on the Republicans to jump out like they did.
Well, it's certainly a direct impact on the image of the Republican Party because, again, and this is the thing I wrote about, the net effect here are the moderates and the independent voters who are paying attention now, who see the Republicans painted as the party that's just the party of BS. We say one thing, we do another. And I don't know how that's not damaging.
It is damaging. It's terrible. And that's why you're seeing what you're seeing. Probably even on the Democrat side, that thought they were going to get a super liberal in Barack Obama. And these people on the left that didn't get everything they wanted are hopping mad. And the same thing can be said on the Republican side. And that Ted Cruz kind of goes into that slap. That's not enough to get you the majority, which you need to win the or win the election.
Did you ever think you'd envision Cruz winning Iowa, Trump winning New Hampshire, and possibly, this might be a stretch though, Rubio taking South Carolina? And we're almost back to ground zero.
Yeah.
Which creates opportunities for Governor Kasich, I think.
Right.
And
and by the way, Kasich is the only grown-up in the room who actually suggested let the process play out.
Yes, he did. And it'll be interesting to see what happens after South Carolina. Jeb Bush is in that poll we just talked about. It's 4% in South Carolina. If he loses, I don't know if he stays in or not.
So Governor Nikki Haley is one of the strongest young women in politics. She stood up to the Confederate flag controversy in South Carolina. She did a pretty crazy good job when the natural disaster, the flooding hit.
The Charleston shooting.
She handled the Charleston shooting well. She's a rising star. In a world of endorsements that mean nothing, does her endorsement of Rubio mean something?
Yeah, because he's also got Trey Gowdy, he's got Tim Miller, and he's got one other one I'm drawing a blank on. So he's got a lot of the establishment. In South Carolina, I went down there in 2000 with McCain. South Carolina,
it's a rough state.
It's rough, but their party structure is very strong. So I think with those, it's meaningful in that it's the trifecta for him. And she is about as impressive a person as you're ever going to see, Nikki Haley. And I know she's loved there. And she's part of that bench that I thought in 2012 we were going to see in this cycle, but the Donald sucked all the air out of the room.
And again, to take it all the way back to where we started, if Hillary's a non-aspirational candidate and it's hurting her on the Democrat side, are Republicans so different that they're responding to the everything sucks in America candidate this way?
Well, it's interesting to hear that the Democrats talk about how bad the country is, considering they've had a Democrat president for the last 7 years. But I think you're seeing a more optimistic message out of Marco Rubio. You're certainly seeing it out of the Governor Kasich. And I think when all said and done, listen, I agree with President Obama, who said yesterday, I have more faith in the American people that they're going to do the right thing than I do in a lot of the nonsense that's going on from some of the carnival barkers we're seeing.
There's a great book called The President's Club. Nancy Gibbs from Time Magazine was a co-editor of the book. And it was interviews with all the surviving presidents and historical documentation on the presidents and what they wrote. And all of them, to a man, because we haven't had a woman yet, all said the same thing. It changes once you have the gig.
Sure.
When you have the weight of the job and
you get the national security briefings.
Yeah, well, that's just it. And when you understand what the job is and the responsibility it entails, it changes everything. And the idea that we can put that kind of weight on one person is pretty crazy to begin with, but it's worked pretty well for 250 some odd years. I sure hope we don't screw it up this time.
Well, as a Republican, I'm concerned about Cruz or Trump actually being the nominee. I think that creates a whole lot of problems for the Republican Party in general, which has made huge gains nationwide, picked up 900 legislative seats, House, Senate, governorships, had a great run with President Obama in office, and we're going to blow it all if we nominate Cruz or Trump, I believe.
The infrastructure of both parties is so firmly entrenched, and they've written rules to protect their existence. Is there any way to get a third party started?
Probably not. And say Trump wants to go out. They're in Illinois, there's a sore loser law. If you've run on as a Republican, you can't run again. But third parties, it's tough to be viable. I just hope that the Republican Party can see that they need somebody, a Rubio or a Kasich or somebody like that, that'll actually not kill the party long term. We have an image problem, and it's not helped by some of the stuff. It's certainly not. I watched Ted Cruz last night, and I go, that doesn't help us either on CNN.
No, it's a self-induced image problem. No. Self-inflicted, I should say.
The dude creeps me out, man.
Trump and Cruz both.
Just, I watched.
Yeah. And tonight, Trump, Bush, and Kasich, and it's going to be difficult for Kasich to rise above the noise of Trump and Bush yapping at each other, so I hope there's less of that.
But they're separate interviews, right, so he can come out on his own.
Is that right?
Yeah, they were doing it one-on-ones. And
I missed last night completely.
He's picking up a lot of newspaper endorsements, too, so we'll see.
All right. Listen, if this doesn't work out, it's your fault. I just want you to know.
Listen,
that.
Steve, you and I both got new putters yesterday, so whatever happens is presidential race.
By the way,
we're going to have a good summer.
How about we end on good news coming out of Washington today? The Blackhawk ceremony is
That's
at the
true.
White House
today. That's true.
That's all positive.
Right. All right. I'd love to live in the world of denial for just a little bit. Are you going to risk? Thank you, Pat. Pat Brady. And again, your social media is?
Next Generation Strategies, Pat_Brady. Thank you.
Pat_Brady. Thanks, buddy. And by the way, he has to go to Springfield today.